Hi, and welcome to the 148th edition of the Keen Minds podcast. We cover NBC's The Blacklist. We will be covering episodes, season 10, episodes 2 through 4 today. I'm Jen, aka Takata Saeko.
And I am Tessa.
And I apologize, everyone. My voice is a little nasally and allergy-y. And so the wonders of it right now. So apologies if I sound really funky, but we're going to cover the Whaler, we're going to cover the Four Guns, and the Hyena, and we'll be walking through each individually. So let's start with the Whaler. What'd you think, Tessa?
It was fun, but I mean, compared to the other kind of like, it reminded me a little bit of when the whole gang went to, I think it was Monaco with Liz to get the painting. It was good. I mean, I really, really like how they're developing Siya Malik.
Her introduction, like, and I really feel like this episode was meant to solidify her and give her some connection there, especially with Wrestler. I kind of hope they're not going through a, hey, look, they're going to be a couple later. But regardless, I liked how they were situating them as wrestlers. Like, too many people have died. Your mother died in this, and I'm going to lose sleep. Like, just be aware. I am going to lose sleep over this. It doesn't mean you're not good at what you do, but a lot of people that have come before you who were just as talented have died during, you know, working with Reddington. I really liked how they cemented that and how they essentially led her in using that path. It felt very humanizing for both parties.
Mm-hmm. And also I like that she has like the earrings, and I didn't really catch the meaning of the earrings the first time. On the second watch, it's like, so she has toys. I guess they have an M. Like, or no, who's the guy? Solo 7?
No. No, M sends them out. It's Q.
Q. So I like that they had her with some toys, so they gave her a little bit of a 007.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is she MI5 or MI6?
MI6.
MI5. Oh, okay. I thought she said
it's
5.
MI6.
Okay.
I think MI6. But it was really interesting to me how they set up, especially because they again go into that kind of role reversal where, you know, like Wrestler is fully expecting he'll be the one playing the cards and Siya will be the arm candy. And Siya is like, absolutely. And, you know, Reddington is, nope, you're the arm candy.
Yeah, I mean, and it goes back to Red's opinion that Wrestler can't, anybody can see through Wrestler, that he looks like a cop. And so this was, they use that to their advantage. Anytime he goes undercover with Red, he's always, the corrupt cop. And so because he didn't have a position like that, they made him the money, which he's supposed to be respectable looking. He's supposed to be more straightforward looking if he's the businessman that's funding her. And so that made a lot of sense there. I kind of think that Red gave him a good
that she's also the one rescuing him, as opposed to the other way.
Yeah,
we also see in the Four Guns that Panna Baker is the one that, you know, she's not about to be saved by waiting to be saved by anybody. So I like that. And that goes, you know, back to when the Blacklist used to do this kind of reversals of the things you expect. And I, you know, like the example you always put when you see a woman walking and a guy walking and you assume the woman is the one being followed and is the other way around.
Exactly.
So playing with your expectations to deliver a quick reversal, keep you on your toes that not everything is as it seems.
So I was going to say, one of the things that I found that I really liked in it was, as Sia was meeting Red for the first time, did you catch the reference?
Oh, yes. That's one of my notes. Man of Wealth and Taste, and that was the, in episode, I think it was the second episode, they give us a man of wealth and taste.
It's Rolling Stones' Sympathy for the Devil. Yeah, I laughed out loud at that one. I was sitting at my desk watching it in the background, and I went, oh my God, they did it.
Well, they've done every episode so far, they've done one reference back to the past. And usually going back to the first season, most of them, I think, that I've catch are from the first season.
And in case anybody hears in the background, I apologize. Since the last time we've done this, or at least since the last season, I adopted a husky, and he is very loud. I may not be able to edit it all out.
But he's cute.
He is, and he knows it. It's the problem.
That's a problem with the young guys that are cute and vocal, and you just kind of, what are you going to do? I also, since we're going into this things from the past, it reminded me very much of the introduction of the real introduction of Mira Malik, which is in season two, in episode two of the season one. That's the first time that she's there. And Liz is going undercover with Wu Jing. And she says, I don't know anything about encryption. And it's Malik who gives her the equipment and the thing that she puts on the computer and the whole thing.
I hadn't caught that one. That's a very good one. You're right.
And this time Siya doesn't know anything about poker. And there is somebody, and Red basically says, yeah, but I brought you this guy who's going to teach you everything. So that was another little bit of that, going back to that. And I like it because they're really introducing Siya Malik, and it's a reference to the first time that we met her mother, Mira.
Yeah, and they're hearkening, and I think that's nice that they're hearkening back more to Mira than they are to Liz, because I think that they were trying to draw so many parallels that just didn't fit well with Park and Liz, and you're sitting there going, why? It just feels repetitive. But when it's Siya to Mira, it makes sense, because it's a mother and a daughter, which goes back to the family, and so it fits well in the landscape of the Blacklist.
Well, also, there's very different, because Rhett says, I can laugh at your jokes, I can do that, but, you know, this is a professional relationship. And in that context, you just know that's fine. And Rhett is like, you practice that one? It felt like they were bringing things back. Some things were direct. Basically a mirror situation, not exactly the same, but going back, and others were a direct contrast to Liz, that you know that Liz, when Liz said this is going to be a professional relationship only, you didn't believe it. You didn't believe that Liz meant it. She was just being pissy. In this case, it looks totally correct.
Was it? You were saying that you feel like it's, you know, it's accurate that it's going to be a professional relationship between Siya and Red. I have to wonder, because the way Red works, he pulls everybody into his orbit so much that it's almost, everybody starts the professional relationship with him, but it never ends that way if they stay there very long. And so if she continues with this, if she lasts with them for any length of time, it will eventually get personal. And in a way, it's already started that way, because working with him is what got her mother killed.
Well, of course, but I meant, like, you could see that Liz was drawn to Red from the very beginning, trusting him, you know, from the very beginning with the gun that she found and the whole thing. Whether this is a different situation. So I like that some things are different, yeah, and some things have parallels that are pretty much, you know, right on target. Did you realize what they were doing with Wu Jing, that basically was a way for Wu Jing to get clean money?
I honestly don't remember if I caught on to that early. I don't remember the point that I caught on to it, but I think it's a very clever idea.
And very clever. I like that.
Yeah.
It felt interesting to me. It didn't occur to me like what war on earth were they doing. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And so I didn't realize, but no, I thought it was very clever. I very much enjoyed that piece of it.
How did you like wrestler gets, you know, they get into trouble, and of course they start beating up wrestler, and it's Escilla who saves wrestler.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think he expected her to do that. I think he was expecting her, which is nice, because he was at that point, he was acknowledging her, the level of skill that she works with, and he wasn't underestimating her at that point. So I did like that scene. You know, I would think the guys would see her coming, but you know, it's she got one over on them. They were, I guess, hyper focused on wrestler, and as Russ was trying to make them, I mean, he was taking the attention on him to give her a chance to get out and get the upper hand.
I found it very interesting that this episode had women being pretty brutal, because the Whaler was pretty brutal in that elevator with that guy. Reminded me of Gina with Wrestler.
Yeah. Well, I mean, except for the fact that this guy wasn't a trained, you know, agent. He wasn't a trained anything. He was just a casino manager. I mean, so I think if that woman had been up against someone like Wrestler or someone, you know, someone with training, I don't think she would have stood a chance.
But it was interesting that they chose to have a scene like that in the elevator when they had done one similar in season one with Gina and Wrestler.
Yeah, I mean, it was so... I mean, I was expecting something, but I wasn't expecting that. And I think it was so sudden and so intense that it took both the audience and the guy, like we felt it with him.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was well filmed and definitely well acted.
Exactly. Well choreographed as well. They did a good job of it. I think it elicited the emotion that the guy on the floor was feeling. Because I honestly assumed he was about to die. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's going to be problematic for her. But then she turned it around and used it as blackmail against him. And I went, okay, all right, that's believable. I can get that behind that one.
Do you have any more notes on the Whaler?
I do.
When Red appeared was really interesting. I really like that, because Red is like, we're not going to like give each other dirty noses.
Yeah, yeah. That was, again, it's that expectation. I feel like the audience probably expected him to show up sooner or later, but like that wasn't necessarily surprising, but it's that sudden move. And I think it was essentially a not... Red was proving to Wu Xing that not only was he here to play hard, but Wu Xing shouldn't assume that he knows what his next move is going to be, much less his next five moves. It was proving that he not only has moves to make, but he's unafraid of them. And so whether that's true or not, nobody ever knows, but Red is the master of making everybody around him think that.
It was a nice throwback, and for a bit I felt like I was watching the old Red.
And oh,
that was
same.
A welcome.
Very much same. It felt like Red there.
Yeah. It was
I was cheering for him in that moment. And I haven't wanted to cheer for Red in a long time, but I really felt a need to cheer for Red.
I love that phrase too. Whatever cards I get are the right cards.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fantastic. It goes back to his ability to bluff. I mean, which is good for poker, but I thought that whole scene was phenomenal, bringing him in like that. Mm-hmm. What'd you think about Agnes with the whole bit with Red sticking his nose in with Agnes and Cooper putting a firm foot down and Red just essentially ignoring him?
Well, he didn't quite ignore Cooper. He found a way around Cooper. He didn't do anything to the families. I think Cooper was thinking that Red was going to like beat the crap out of the guy or something like this.
It really doesn't matter what Cooper thought. Cooper said, "We're her parents. You know, we're the ones that adopted her. We want to handle this. We have a way, we have an approach that we want to handle this with." And Red went, "All right," and then promptly went over and got the dad.
In defense, he saw that the bullying was getting pretty physical. It was a moment that reminded me of how did Liz and how was Red reaction with Agnes influenced by what he had seen with Liz. I mean, granted, Liz was a very, very traumatized child, but Liz had also a pretty scary level of violence inside that only needed just a little bit of darkness. And I think that Red is acting like that. And at the same time, I can see how he's not, I can imagine Red doing the same thing with Liz. And how when you don't learn to handle things on smaller scale, when you get to the big scales, then you end up breaking the thumb of the husband.
That's exactly what I was going to say. So you just took the words right out of my mouth. Was that, okay, I'm with you. I 100% can see Red's reasoning on it. But I think the Coopers were attempting, as you just said,
a normality.
To help her work through these emotions. As you know, as a child, she has support when she goes home. She has support if she needs it, but she's still learning to navigate the world around her and grow up with these things. And as you just said, if she doesn't learn it, I mean, just take a look at any kid who had a helicopter parent growing up. And as an adult, they go into the workplace and they're sobbing in the corner because they can't handle anything. You know, I mean, it's a little bit different situation, but that's essentially
it. You can't do the big.
Exactly. And so I really do think that that's what Cooper was doing. And Red, it goes back to Red's feeling and view of the world that his point of view is really the only one that matters. He's the only one that's right. If someone disagrees with him, they're wrong. He's right. He's going to do what he's going to do.
I don't think that he feels that he's wrong, he's right. It's almost like what I saw there was not so much as Red ignoring what Cooper was saying, as Red being unable to control himself. Like he's trying really hard and he didn't beat up the family and the guy.
I don't think that was ever on the table, beating up some bully's family.
I don't know, but I started thinking about that a while ago. I wonder what happened to that boyfriend of Liz who cheated on her. And I have a feeling he ended up being beaten up pretty badly at some point or another. I mean, and you see the way Red acts with Agnes. He go back 30 years, and what you find is probably he beat the crap out of him.
Maybe. Who knows? But, you know, the old boyfriend also wasn't, you know, an 8-year-old kid.
No, I mean, I wasn't thinking that he was going to go beat up the kid, but certainly make sure to the parent that they were going to control the situation. I mean, it was a great way of solving the problem for the immediate problem, not for the future situation. And I think that's not something that Red handles well.
Agreed.
So his life has been a control of situations in the immediate danger, and he has forgotten about normal life. Plus,
that's
I
a very
think
good
that
point,
he
yes.
had a very, very good handle in normal life. If he was thrown up by his father, he probably doesn't really have a lot of normalcy in his life, depending on what time he was thrown out.
Well, I mean, I've always gotten the impression that he was
a teen.
or later. And so upper teens or, 18, something like that, like that he was
He
sent
was
away.
17 in the academy, if
Okay,
that is
then
any of them.
yeah.
Yeah,
Then yeah, but
something like
prior to
that.
that, essentially that's where he went.
What I loved about those episodes was Red showing up in Cooper's apartment. Every time he did it, I had the best laugh ever. Did you sleep here?
Do I need to get you a
No.
blow-up mattress? Yeah, I loved that. Well,
And
it's really interesting. It's the undercurrent of the mystery of like what's going on with Red this season. Does he have a home? Why is he kicking all of his security out? What's going on here?
I love that. But whenever he goes, he makes coffee and breakfast, and he's like
Helps himself to the whiskey.
he's one of those. He probably brings a couple of bottles. I mean, that's already is. He never like takes advantage of people. He probably drops like three or four very expensive, very rare whiskey bottles as well. But
I finished your whiskey, but I got you one twice as expensive to replace it.
It's almost like one of those relatives that you just don't want to invite, but they always find a way to the family celebration. And they're charming and they bring a great present, and you're like, oh my God, are they ever going to leave?
But they also, like, it's a 50-50 chance that they'll get you thrown in prison along with them. I mean, everyone's got one of those, right?
So, any more notes on the whaler?
Nope, that's all I got.
Okay. So the four guns. I enjoy that episode enormously.
I really liked it. Yeah, I actually liked all three episodes. So I was really putting them off because I was a little gun shy on
Dreading them.
everything. Yeah, I was. And so, oh my God, my voice is going out. I'm so sorry,
It's
guys.
so much easier when you watch three at a time. I watched
Yeah.
them in Amazon with no ads. It was a lot more enjoyable.
Well, I didn't watch them with Amazon because I've stopped paying to watch this show. And so,
I confess to a weakness.
yeah.
No ads mean I'll take it.
Yeah, I get that. I do. It's we'll see how long I go if I, end up purchasing some episodes a season. But regardless, I very much enjoyed this episode. I thought that the blacklisters were a lot of fun. The pickpockets that are coordinating, they're very
I love the group. They were so all different from each other. You would not even
yeah.
believe they belong in the
Well,
same.
I think that's part of what makes them work though. And they're so loyal to each other.
Of what the guy said. You go in for the reward, and then you have to take the rest of the stuff that comes with it.
Yep. And so let's see. So Panna Baker, honestly, like even the guy that hired the four guns, I was really impressed with how they handled it because that, especially today's political climate, it's incredibly difficult to write a villain that is a political villain that's,
He wasn't really a political villain.
well, that's what they made him look like at the beginning.
At
So
the
like
beginning, yes.
as soon as I saw him, I went, oh my God, no, this is gonna be so bad and it's gonna be so polarizing. I'm gonna hate it. But as it went on, he was doing his duty. And I mean, if you're right about, Red having been undercover for a long time, and if Red was really, a naval officer, et cetera, if Red was Red essentially, then I think that we may see some of those parallels come into it with doing your duty, even if it's not by the book. Even if you're going,
Even
even
if you
if you've
can't even
thrown.
stand the guy who you're doing it for.
Yeah, exactly. And you're throwing the book out the window, lighting it on fire, and yeeting it across the parking lot. You're still doing your duty.
Yeah, well,
And
it was
it was really
interesting.
interesting.
It was interesting that sense, because Panna Baker was also doing something that didn't it ended up backfire because you would think that you would have all these very diverse opinions. The guy was doing it because he thought that she wasn't fit to hold office. And that was one point of view. And then another one was this guy saying, but you've swore to do something and now you're not doing it. And if you don't do what you swore to do, then what else is going to go wrong? if you just decide to do the, you know, the first thing that comes in your head instead of what you're supposed to do, instead of your job. So it was as usual, you know, it could have been difficult, but it turned out to be okay.
I ended up really liking it. But I actually really, really liked it. I thought that it was a nice twist. I thought it was a classic Blacklist twist that I was too skittish to see coming, and then really appreciated it when I was proven wrong on my expectations.
Mm-hmm. Plus, I love to see Cynthia have your cheese completely slide over your cracker. That's one I actually really like.
I just would not have pegged her for a Virginia senator. I would have thought, and maybe it's because she moved to Virginia because she's been in the government for so long. Mm-hmm. That's what makes the most sense. But that accent, I think Deidre is actually from Texas. I think she's from like Lubbock or something like that.
Yeah, so I think that she was always from the South, but they never said exactly.
No, they haven't.
But it was great that at the end, I mean, she's like, I love that. I'm not waiting for anybody to come and rescue me.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just so her to have a hidden gun. And I mean, think about the kind of people that she's been involved with over the years, the kind of people that have tried to blackmail her, like Red, who have put her in very bad positions, that she's gotten into very bad positions with.
And she's got into bad positions herself.
Yeah, and that's why I said, you know, like, both people have put her into it, and she's also gotten herself into it. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, she'd be an absolute moron not to carry a gun on her. And so, like, good for her.
Yep. It was really fun to see her again. And it was fun to see her getting out of trouble herself. Definitely all felt... It was funny because it wasn't really an episode really about really serious issues, like what's right and what's wrong. And each one of these guys, they were not acting for profits. They were not acting for, you know, to get an edge. They were just outraged at something, and they had different, very different views about what was right. And you know, the books were pretty lethal.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's a very good topic for today's day and age.
I found that it was interesting that you're getting into this pickpocket, because if you remember, Liz was always the nimble fingers one, the sticky fingers would just, you know, steal stuff and do the sleight of hand and take things from people. I mean, that's one of the first things that they put in Liz. This goes with a freelancer to steal something. So that was always been in the one of the things. So it was a throwback to Liz without mentioning Liz.
So something I have in my notes, speaking of mentioning Liz. So it's a delicate line to balance. And I will start off by saying that. But when you have your leading lady that is no longer on the show, and you kill her off so horribly, it's difficult to find a way to allow her memory to remain without shoehorning it in every episode, like trying to find new ways. Like it's a balance that people have to strike. And I feel like right now, Wrestler is their way to remember her. And it's always, it feels like it's shoehorned in. I that moment in this particular episode that they're talking about, you know, losing someone. He's like, my partner, and looks over. I mean, it's so dramatic and so on the nose.
Well, it was, they're going, it was, oh my gosh. It was very soap opera-y.
It was, yeah. And I rolled my eyes so hard.
Those I don't like. I like the ones like this one, when we get a pickpocket and then you remember, boy, Liz was supposed to be the one with the sticky fingers, and she was always like, you know, if something had to be stolen, it was her.
Exactly. And so I hope that I think I understand what they're trying to do, but they're just so heavy-handed with it. It's exhausting.
Another thing that was interesting was cannot change the obsessions, because he was trying to reform and not steal stuff and going low profile. That's why he stopped being arrested, but he could not change the obsessions. And I remember that that's something that Red said about in Bastian Moreau, when he was trying to find Vladakis or something like that. And he said, you can change your aspects, but you cannot change who you are. And you're always going to go play the ponies. That's where you're going to go.
How did you like the whole bit with Red setting setting Robert up for the prison break?
Vintage Red.
Enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I kind of had the feeling. It kind of reminded me of, I don't remember if they did it in the TV show, but in the A-Team movie that they did maybe 10, 15 years ago, they had that with, I'm totally blanking on his name, the Colonel. But he would get it with a cigar and it'd be just the right, you know, amount that he'd breathe it in and he would look dead. And so it was very similar to that sort of setup. But something I found that was really interesting was the books and the meaning behind the books, and Robert mentioning the meaning behind the books, almost as if it was a reminder, hey, guys, remember, audience, there's a meaning behind what we're doing. Just hang in with us a little bit longer. I don't know if I trust it. I want to trust it, but, you know, it was interesting.
Okay. I thought it was very interesting and very much on the nose, because they have Vesco comment on it. You know, it's a story about, you know, a man who teaches a boy how to go for a treasure hunt and teaches him. So I think that it could very well be, and he's, you know, and Ren had mentioned Treasure Island many times. It was on the 100th episode. That he said, when he said he loved it and he used to be always, you know, one of those things that always got me peeved when Red started, or they signed saying that Red was Russian, because he was talking about his friend Herbie Honeycutt. If they wanted something not obvious, they could have sent his friend Ivan. But Herbie was not in Russia. Anyway, so going back to that, I really enjoyed seeing Vesco again. Vesco is always a great character. Stacy Keach and Spader have a great rapport, and it really shows when they're acting. And I was surprised that with Vesco, and I think it's a way of telling us something, that Vesco didn't want half. He wanted a third, and he wanted the remaining free sister to have it.
Yeah, I really liked that. I mean, I was a little surprised, but it was sweet. And maybe it's just, you know, him going soft in his older age.
That's in the next episode. But
oh, it is. Sorry.
That was me. The way that Red did it, I mean, as soon as he said, like, the books with arsenic, and he brought this very rare copy, Red is far more obvious now. He's not, almost like he's not trying to hide himself. He's on the subway, he's taking the train.
Well, it's been interesting this season, because they're teeing it up like he's sick again. And I really don't necessarily think that's true, just because it feels so blatant the way they're doing that. But he's, you know, he's bringing in people he cares about, and, you know, he doesn't seem to care about his own safety, sort of thing. And so
Vesco said that's bullshit, and Red said, okay, I want your help.
To be fair, that could have been Red being honest, and then when Vesco when Vesco didn't believe him on, he's like, I'm gonna go with the more flippant answer, not the real answer necessary, not even not the real answer, but not the not the 100% real answer. You know what I mean?
Well, it's exactly right. I think that Red wanted Vesco out. I think that he felt very bad that Dembe got him in jail, because that wasn't Red's doing, despite what Eugene said. That wasn't Red's doing. That was just Dembe getting all high and mighty and decided to put him in jail. I mean, really, of all the villains, really, Vesco is not one that absolutely totally deserves to be in jail. I mean,
I honestly didn't remember why he
Perillos, went. I'm like, right there, yes. That guy needs to go to jail or be killed. Absolutely. That's one bad guy. But Vesco, I mean, there's swindles, there are cons, you know, I love seeing him out of jail. Now, the way when they do the four guns and you know that Red is going to use him for something else, because he said, oh, that's why I put the Rolex in there. And that's the same. Oh, that's the only one I didn't write down. The Rolex. Remember that Red, that was going back to Tom and back to when they're trying to get to Constantine, and he goes to his friend and that had recovered the Rolex that he had left in some princess boudoir, and then he said that he exchanged it for a plate of shish or something. And remember that story? It's in season three, and Tom is working undercover, and he sent them as this ex-soldier to work to intercept that train.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's that Rolex there. So again, it's just one more little thing, but the fact that they're going back to the brand of the watch and all that brings that back, that Red has had this watch and he had lost it and have paid somebody to recover. So you can see how we really wanted to get the locations of the four guns in order to use them to get Vesco out. And I thought it was absolutely perfect. I enjoy the way they got him out of a hospital. You know, when they turn around and there's two priests and there's two, it's going back to the twos to get him out of the hospital. Two priests, two people in the wheelchair. That thing about duplicates that we have had since, you know, going back all this time.
Trying to see if there's anything else that I had in here. No, that's the last I had for the four guns. I really enjoyed it, though. I really enjoyed that one. I thought it was clever and interesting the whole way through. And as you said, many nice callbacks.
I found interesting, you know, you were talking before about, you know, if Red is an undercover cover. Is one interesting thing about this guy was that was the killer, the Secret Service agent, the former Secret Service agent, was that he resorted to crime to purge what he thought was a bad situation in his job that he has swore to protect. If you're a naval officer, you have swore to protect your country, and resorting to crime to do that would be a very lovely way of creating
a court-martialed. Getting court-martialed.
Yeah, well, that too. But so that, I like that you said that you got that as well.
Well, yeah, and I think we're definitely looking in through the lens of the world that is the Blacklist. So we've said multiple times that, you know, we're looking, there's a foundation for the world that's been set. And so, I have never 100% subscribed to the idea that Red's been undercover this whole time, but I'm also not necessarily against it.
Well, it's One of the things that Nacallo did that was particularly corrosive, even for, you know, back then rabid fans like me, was the removal of the noble quest that the character is doing. You could always, there was only one way of justifying what Red was doing, not telling Liz. You could say, well, it's a part of cowardice.
You can get behind a villain if it's not just their intention is good, but their end goal is good, because then they become an anti-hero.
Yeah, it's you have a noble quest that you're doing. The only way that you could justify that Red had not told Liz the answers that she needed was only if Red was balancing protecting Liz with protecting someone else and or achieving something for a higher good, like taking down the cabal, or there is something else. That was the only way this entire mess make any sense. And that's why I was always thinking that had to be the way it goes. But Nacallo removed that. This was all to supposedly protect Liz. But in reality, all it did was put more danger in her way by not never stop meddling. And if you remove that noble quest, there is nothing left. It's just a bunch of bumbling idiots who just made one thing worse after another. And every time they tried to fix something, they made it worse. They should just have left things alone and none of this would have happened. It's, you know, from Dom and Ivan and Red and Katerina, whoever you believe he is or she is, it's just a bunch of bumbling idiots if you remove that. And this gave me a sliver of hope that maybe Nacallo is going to be reversed somehow. Maybe. I don't think they will. I don't, my hope is unless than 1% that will happen. But at least it's gone to a bit more than zero.
Yeah, I don't have expectations either way anymore. So,
well, you're probably wiser than me. But for me, that felt very much like that. So the last one, the hyena.
I really enjoyed the hyenas. I liked the three sisters. I liked how different each of the three sisters were. And I loved that nice twist that the Blacklist has, you know, historically been so good at, in which that one sister who is, you know, I think she was in South America. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, in Honduras.
Or I don't remember, but she was somewhere.
Central America.
She was somewhere where it sounded like she was, you know, doing charity work and, you know, working with, you know,
didn't care about money. Didn't give
you really
anything.
Got that impression from her. And yet she's the one that, oops, killed a sister. My bad. Mm. You know, I mean, but it was really interesting. She was playing with fire by hiring the hyena. And yet she turned out to be more dangerous than the hyena would have ever expected her to be. As she turned around and killed him instead of killing the sister. It was brutal, that girl. And it was absolutely fascinating. And to watch all three sisters who were raised together in the same way and how absolutely different each one was.
Yeah, well, I love the episode. I thought the actress was
excellent. It's just one woman, too. It was one woman playing all three.
One woman playing multiple. So again, it's not even getting to 1%, but I'm noting that this is one actress playing triplets. Remember my theory that Katerina, they were twins, and they were both played by I cannot remember her name.
Lottie?
Yes, Lottie.
Berbick.
Berbick, that's, yeah. Okay. So that was an interesting part that I thought was interesting, that you have, because you could have had three sisters that were not triplets. I thought if you're going to do triplets, it's because you're expecting them somehow to take the identity of one another, but that didn't happen at all.
It's a very conscious decision.
Yes, definitely. It means something, because you could have hired three actors or hire one. I probably wouldn't have made much difference. Or you could just have had twins, but the end is the three, is the, and I think you mentioned that you had seen threes, or maybe it was the other Jen.
I think it must have been another Jen.
You were seeing threes all the time. It was really interesting the way they did it, with the one that was totally paranoid.
And the paranoid one was the one that ended up right in the end.
Yep. And she was probably totally right about everything.
You know what? Are you really paranoid if they're really out to get you? It's a fair question.
Yep. And that, the one that was like the serious one was the one who ended up dead. But I was also interesting to me that it's the second time a dog is an answer. I don't know if you remember that Dr. Kohler said to look for the Picasso.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, Red is expecting that it's a picture, and the picture will be the list. And it's the dog that died this time, and is stuffed and it's in the collar. So this time, it's not Picasso, it's Diamond, and it's the answer. And it's interesting because this episode was also bringing that sense that what matters is not the money, that he made the money because he had this emptiness, that this emptiness made him a really bad parent. But he was trying to tell them that it's not about the money, it's not about the things, it's about, you know, the dog that he loved, the wife that he loved, and the family, and wanting for them to work together.
Yeah. And also interesting that losing his wife was essentially what sent him spiraling into, for him, it was money. It was a distraction, I think. And that was just painted one episode. I mean, as much as I hate the way they took Liz out, that's what happened to her. I mean, she lost someone she loved. It was one person too many. And, yeah, and she just,
it was, then
crazy.
Did you notice this other one? You're going to love this one. Remember that Red and Kate May say, there was a woman I loved. She was my heart, and I lost her, and she died. The way that the millionaire described his wife is she, and that Red described the way the millionaire thought was she was his heart. So I thought it was very interesting that we go back again to past using exact same phrase.
Well, and I really do think that to a degree, I don't think they'd be able to stretch it beyond this season by any, you know, please don't. But hearkening back the way they are is what's salvaging pieces of this season. And so it's making it enjoyable, because it's a time that we were following the show, that we very much enjoyed it, and that, you know, we obsessed over it. And so it's nice to see the episodes we did love.
And did you see that Vesco said there was an archetypal character waiting for the right actor to fill the role?
Yeah.
That brings back to somebody saying there was just, you know, the you just needed to step into the lie. And it's interesting because they keep doing this. I don't know what it means. I don't know if they will bring it to fruition. Sometimes I think that they might, and others, most of the times I'm thinking they can't. But that was, to me, that was the most enjoyable episode of them all. I enjoyed Red with the the Hemingways, who was not the author, but the cigars, the light,
the gem that was the dog, not the actual diamond.
You know, a reminder of the things that matter. And I thought that Red got Vesco because they both knew him. But it was like looking back to finding the things that matter. I don't know how they will ever salvage there, because obviously there really was no need to kill Liz. They could have just sent her away with the different identity, or she's in, you know.
Yeah, it's.
But they did. But so far, the Hyena has been one of the most enjoyable episodes that I've had. I enjoy very much the paranoid sister, the fact that the villain was the one that I didn't expect it to be. So I thought it was all in all, I was kind of avoiding, like you, to watch the episodes, but I found them enjoyable overall, more enjoyable when you see more at the same time. And no commercials certainly makes a big difference. And once again, I had this like pang of want. If the Blacklist had been a cable show and they would have had 10 episodes per season, it would have been.
Even if they had just done, like, 10 would have been fantastic. 10 or 12 a season would have been phenomenal.
Ending things when they need to end is as important as starting them right.
Yeah. But, you know, it's part of the problem about the corporatization of storytelling, but you need someone to be able to fund the storytelling, so it's a vicious circle. So frustrating.
So, I think that we're setting with a good season. I certainly hope that they bring us some sort of closure, because despite what a lot of people think, in my opinion, Nakalo said nothing. So we're basically in the same spot. We have no idea who Red is or was. And what was his relationship with Liz?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that we get answers. I hope that we get a decent ending. It would be sad not to. Oh, did you remember? Did you notice that Sia also did a second profile of Red?
No. I missed that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And Wu Jing did as well.
Okay.
You know what he thinks is, and Red says, you have no idea.
Interesting. I guess we'll see where it goes.
Yep.
I will say that of all the people they could have brought back to be the engine forward on this season, I'm glad it was Wu Jing. I like him. I'm cheering for him to win, but like the actor's phenomenal, the character's interesting, and it's just a nice.
Well, there were allies, and you know, Red was setting him up.
Yeah. And so now he's setting Red up, and it's very nice. Did you have any other?
Do you think it will go far that Vesco will start working against Red? Probably.
I really don't know. I was actually going to ask you that, and I forgot, so I'm glad you did.
Unless Red set him up to be the inside man inside Wu Jing's.
Ooh, that'd be cool. I like that.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, well, we know that sometimes Red does react in similar fashion.
I'm not sure if I should be pleased about that.
You're the one
worried.
That's been saying it for years. Just repeating. <that.
gasps> Anyway, so I don't have anything else.
I don't, and I don't have a voice left.
And your voice does, and you have no voice. So...
But hey, guys, we were working very hard to get this made for you. So there you go. We worked so hard that I came here even without a voice. Didn't want to make you wait any longer. So you can listen to us on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify. And you can chat with us on Facebook, on Tumblr, And I'm not honestly sure if it's still posting to Twitter, so apologies if it's not. I don't think the last one did. But catch us on Tumblr or Facebook usually is going to be the best route.
And we do have some questions and comments, and we will address them next time. This was just three episodes, is a lot to cover.
All right, and we will see you. We'll let you know when the next one, when to expect the next one.
All right,
Until
until
then,
then.
bye-bye.